How are you, Dick?
Well, I could be better. I mean, last week I talked to you, I was just getting to Maui, and now I'm just leaving Maui. So I'd say I was better last week than I am right now, that's for sure.
Well, you can get over the holiday blues by getting into the Masters. I'm sure that will help one of the best weeks of the year. And actually, Bulldog, you were just asking or pondering something about Tiger Woods.
Yeah, Dick, I was just talking to Laurie about Tiger, and Laurie said, look, I think it would be great if we could see Tiger in the third round. And my argument was that I don't want to see Tiger Woods being deemed a success by merely making the cut. I want to remember Tiger as being the legend that won 20-odd majors. Is him playing on when he's clearly injured and perhaps past his best, is it damaging his legacy?
I don't think so, but I heard the conversation when I was on hold, and I think you're both right. I think you're both on to something. Yes, we want to see greatness from Tiger Woods, particularly at Augusta, but coming off what he has come off over the last 6 to 9 months, he has not played in nearly as many tournaments as we thought we'd see him in leading up. So he obviously isn't as healthy as we thought he was going to be. So in this particular circumstance, this particular Masters, I think him making the cut, having a good showing, getting, you know, a T36 or a T38, I think that actually would boost confidence for what he might be able to do in future majors when he is more healthy, particularly at Augusta. He should be able to compete at this golf course well into his 50s. There is no question about that. We've seen that from Bernhard Langer. We've seen that from Freddie Couples. And Tiger Woods is far better player than Freddie or Bernhard ever meant to be. No disrespect for those two, but he is arguably the greatest of all time. So Tiger should be able to compete for many, many years. This is not the year that Tiger gets a top 20 just because of his physical condition. But I think making the cut, and I believe it's just an even money bet right now, making the cut. I would probably lean towards Tiger making the cut, but that's certainly just a hope play more so than anything else.
Dick, is there an acceptance over there that Tiger won't win another major, or is that riding him off too prematurely?
I think that there is acceptance might be too strong. But I think we're at the point now where we see so many great golfers in between the ages of 22 and 32, and they're not going away, guys. and there's only more coming in, right? I mean, Ludwig Åberg is the latest example of just this early 20s wonder kid that's going to come in and just make it tougher and tougher and tougher for golfers in their 40s to win a major.
Who do you like then, Dick? Who are we betting on for the Masters?
Well, guys, I mean, it's tough to put money on a 4.5 or 5-to-1 play, but I mean, Scottie Scheffler is as obvious a pick for this Masters as probably Tiger Woods in his prime, and it's the lowest odds of anybody we've seen to win the Masters since Tiger Woods in his prime. I mean, I think a top five for Scotty, that seems just to be, it's been free money lately, guys. If you just continued to bet Scotty top five over his last 10 tournaments, 20 tournaments, you would definitely be in the positive. There's no question about that. I'm going to lean towards a guy. I'll give you two picks. I'll give you my value play, which I think is Hideki Matsuyama. I think he is every bit as capable of winning this tournament again as those top five or six guys on the odds board are, and he is down below those guys on the odds board, so that's a very good value play, I think, and he's playing excellent golf. His approach game is prime Hideki right now. But guys, I'm going to go with a guy that, if there's one name in the world that deserves to win a major that has not yet won a major, it's Xander Schauffele, guys. I mean, he is always in the top 10. Every single tournament, he's in the top 10. The only difference between him and these other guys is he hasn't gotten over the hump yet and won a major championship. Now, some may think, hey, you got to win a couple, you know, of these elevated events first and kind of work your way into the Masters. But Xander Schauffele, there's no weakness to his game, guys. And we've talked about him many times before. And again, he's a guy that if you put a lot of money on his top tens, you would be way, way up. If you put a lot of money on his win equity, you'd be way, way down because he just doesn't win that much. So I think the safe play is just to play a nice Xander Schauffele top 10, but maybe sprinkle a little bit on the win as well, because at some point that guy is going to win a major championship.
Rightio then, Dick. What about our Aussies? Who's our top pick over there, do you think?
Well, you know, experience always matters. Adam Scott is playing good golf. Jason Day is playing good golf. Those two guys are, I saw you, I heard you mention that Jason's playing with Tiger Woods. I don't think either one of them has win equity anymore at this point, but both of those guys have shown numerous times that Augusta is no fear for them, particularly Adam Scott. So I like both of those guys. I will always like both of those guys in elevated events where it really matters, and because they just have such great form at that course.
Dick, I'll be fascinated to know what happens inside the locker room. Do you think there'll be any hidden hostility between the PGA and LIV players?
I don't think so, guys. And I don't know if you've seen the latest Full Swing on Netflix, but there is more hostility between the European Ryder Cup team and the American Ryder Cup team than there was between the LIV golfers and the PGA Tour golfers. So since this is year number two of these guys coming to Augusta, and we really didn't see any hostilities at all last year, and in fact, we saw tremendous performances, surprisingly tremendous performances from the LIV golfers. I'm not going to make the same mistake with you guys that I made last year. I mean, I basically sat here with you a year ago today, and I said, fade every single LIV golfer going into Augusta because they just haven't played the same type of competition that the PGA Tour players have played. And boy, did that flop, because, I mean, what do we have? Three LIV golfers in the top six in last year's Masters. So I'm not putting any of those LIV guys out to pasture going into this tournament. That's for sure.
Okay, let's talk March Madness, which came to a conclusion. We'll start with the men. UConn going back-to-back 75-60 over Purdue. Zach Edey, I guess, a bit of a one-man band there for Purdue, but UConn, clearly the best team all season, fair to say, Dick?
They were the best team all season. It's funny, the only reason I didn't want to pick them for the championship, I put them in my bracket, but everybody else put them in their bracket too. But, I mean, the only reason I didn't want to take them because I just wanted to fade the back-to-back notion of a national champion, even though they were the best team going in. You just don't win back-to-back national championships. It's only happened six or seven times, six or seven different schools in the last 100 years, and the last being over 15 years ago. So what Coach Hurley and UConn have done is truly remarkable. He's a very bold coach. He comes out and says, you know, we are the standard barrier. We are going to make a dynasty. He's very, very outspoken. People love him. And, he's not mean, but he's very, very tough. He's a very, very gruff guy with a great personality. He knows how to separate his gruffness while he's coaching and still be a very fun person to talk to on the air as well. So I think that's a really good combination. And you're going to have guys flocking to want to go to UConn and play for him for the next 5 or 10 years. There's no question about that.
And we're going down the final straight in the NBA. Dick, there's not too many games left. Who are some of the sides that are going to miss out, and who's the standouts on either conference?
Well, I mean, we have to stick with Boston in the East. It would be a massive, massive upset for somebody to get Boston. They have just proven to be the best team by far in that conference all season long. Saw where they're up on second place by something like 12 or 13 games. It's just ridiculous, but what they've been able to do. The team that I think is intriguing, though, and is now starting to get healthy is Philadelphia. So Philadelphia is a team down the board in those standings that I think could give Boston a little run, potentially could make the Eastern Conference Finals. So they're a team to watch. I am absolutely fascinated to see what the LA Lakers do in the playoffs. I think that they set up, if they are the 8th seed and play Denver in the first round, that is the time I want to see the Denver Nuggets if I'm Los Angeles. I want AD healthy. Hopefully his eye is okay. I want LeBron healthy. I want these guys not, you know, feeling the effects of two or three playoff series where they're really beaten down. I want them to get to Denver early because I think that's the one team in the Western Conference that I think can get Denver. Minnesota's intriguing now. It sounds like Karl Anthony Towns is going to come back. They have no prayer without him. But if they have Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns, they're a team that at least poses a threat to Denver. I like teams, however, though, that have reached the conference finals before I'm ready to pick them to win the conference finals. So I won't have Minnesota winning. I mean, you kind of have to stick with chalk right now in Denver and Boston.
Just before we leave basketball, the women's NCAA final, South Carolina, clearly again the best team, 87-75 over Caitlin Clark's Iowa. But I believe the ratings again, just astronomical, Dick.
Guys, 18 million on average with a high of 24 million is the most watched women's sporting event of all time. It was the most watched basketball game in the last 5 years. That counts NBA and college basketball, wow. Men and women. More than any NBA finals game was watched, that Iowa and South Carolina. What's going to be interesting to see is, does this carry over after Caitlin Clark in the WNBA? I'm loving the fact that I'm a WNBA broadcaster and I get to call Caitlin Clark's games twice every year. So that's going to be a lot of fun. The only thing better is if she would have been, if Seattle would have gotten the number one overall pick, then I'd get to call her in every game. But they're already changing arena venues. I saw where the Las Vegas Aces WNBA team is for the Indiana game is moving out of their 8,000 seat arena and into T-Mobile Arena that seats 18,000 because they need that size in arena because they're going to fill it when Caitlin Clark comes. I've heard that every home game is sold out for Indiana, their home games. She is a supernova. And the question is, how much of the attention that was brought to an excellent women's NCAA tournament is going to carry over to future years, or are we going to see it, you know, plummet back down to where it was before Caitlin Clark? I don't think it'll go back down. I think we'll see a rise. The baseline will rise because people know now that there are great women's basketball players in college and people appreciate the game more than they ever have before. But there certainly will be a dip when Caitlin Clark leaves college basketball. But that rise is going to be seen in the WNBA with her.
Dick, I watched the final yesterday, the men's, and I saw it being played in, I think it was Arizona, the footy stadium. Is that where they always take the final, to an open door venue?
They have open for the venue, last... Sorry. Yeah, there's the last 30 years or so, they close the roof on that. They don't play out. They don't play outside. But they want to move it to football because they want to put as many butts in seats as possible. I've been to many of those in football stadiums. They're sterile. The atmosphere is not great, even though it's filled. It's just not the same watching a basketball game in a football stadium as it is watching a football game in a football stadium because the fans are so far away from the court. So it's not great, but they want as many people as possible. They always want to, you know, advertise, oh, we got 75,000 to watch this game. We got 80,000 to watch this game. But I preferred it, you know, 30 years ago when they had it in college basketball, college arenas, or even NBA arenas instead of NFL stadiums.
Dick, there was a fair bit of chatter on social media last night, which I was keeping an eye on. But the theme of it was that the NFL had seven openings this year. Bill Belichick wanted to work and coach, but couldn't find a job. Where does Bill Belichick stand now in terms of his future?
Boy, guys, the only fit I potentially see for Bill Belichick is Dallas. If Mike McCarthy has another year that approaches what he had this past year, we're going to see both him and Dak Prescott gone. And I think Jerry Jones will just be like, kind of throw his hands up and say, hey, you know what, Bill, come on in, you run the show. Let's see if the Belichick magic will work here in Dallas. That's really the only fit I see, because I don't think there's a lot of franchises that want to hand their team over to Bill Belichick, because Bill Belichick won't just come in and coach the football team. Bill Belichick wants to run the operation like he did in New England. And there's just not a lot of owners, not a lot of general managers that want to give that up to a guy that's, you know, 70 plus years of age.
Could Bill ever change, Dick, or that's just who Bill Belichick is?
That's who he is. You know, he was actually in Seattle this past week for the last week with my Washington Huskies, because we just hired his son to be the defensive coordinator. So he's been running a football camp over the last week in Seattle. It's kind of fun to see Bill Belichick wearing my Husky colors walking around the sidelines. But, you know, I think he might do a little bit of media. As funny as that sounds, he was actually pretty good when he was on with College Game Day this last year for the Army-Navy game. He was very funny, you know, dry sense of humor. He might do a little TV this year, and he'll try to get back into it. But again, I think it's got to be that perfect fit for him.
Someone just texted in about what was he doing there at Huskies training. But they've also texted in saying, Dick, I'm hearing JJ McCarthy has jumped Drake Maye in the quarterback draft rankings?
Well, he has in some quarterback draft rankings, that's for sure. I mean, I think Drake Maye has always been like the number two overall behind Caleb Williams, but nobody's stock has risen more over the last month than J.J. McCarthy. I don't really get it. I think that a guy, if he's that good and that talented, then why is he only throwing about 20 passes a game? Wouldn't Jim Harbaugh want to use his quarterback more than that if he was that good? And yet Jim Harbaugh is touting him as the best quarterback coming out in the draft. I've got to see the deep passing to be a big-time NFL star, and I don't see it from J.J. McCarthy. I see leadership. I see athleticism. I don't think he's going to be a bust. But, I mean, my guy at Washington, Michael Penix, throws the best deep ball of anybody in this draft. He is going to be passed up by four or five teams that'll take quarterbacks ahead of Michael Penix. And I swear, they're going to be ruining the day, a year from now, just like the Carolina Panthers are ruining the day that they did not take C.J. Stroud over Bryce Young. There are going to be four or five teams that are going to rue the day because they take Drake Maye and J.J. McCarthy and Jaden Daniels over Michael Penix.
We've got a couple of texts here wanting us to ask you about John Calipari leaving Kentucky. Of course, this is in men's college basketball.
Stunner, guys. I mean, that was one I had to look at the TV twice when I saw the ticker. I was like, what, did that say Arkansas? Now, just a few days ago, a lot of people were talking about him potentially being fired at Kentucky because he certainly hasn't reached the level that he did 10 to 15 years ago there. But to go to Arkansas is an interesting move. I mean, it's a big conference SEC, but Arkansas hasn't been a power. They've had a couple of years, but they haven't been a power since Nolan Richardson was there 30 years ago. So it's a very interesting move. It's great for Kentucky, for those people that wanted him out, because Arkansas has got to buy him out of his contract from Kentucky. So Kentucky gets, I think it was $30 million was that buyout. It's a huge buyout to get John Calipari. But, I was very stunned to see that. If you would have told me John Calipari would have been fired, I would have believed that more than I would have him just leaving on his own to go to Arkansas.
Well, mate, thank you as always. Safe travels home. Enjoy the Masters.
Thank you, sir. I love this week. Can't wait to watch.